Since founding art rock band The Soft Boys in 1976, Robin Hitchcock has gone on to write and record well over 500 songs, making him one of the most prolific and illustrious artists of our generation. If you think of, say, Louis C.K. as a comedian's comedian, Robin Hitchcock could be referred to as a musical version of this, the musician's musician. Every week we ask an artist to nominate a piece of work that means most to them. Well, today Robin has chosen another set of prolific musicians for his masterpiece. It's an album no doubt you'll know, but I doubt you'll have delved into it with as much passion and detail as we're about to now.
One, two, three, four. One, two.
Let me tell you how it will be.
So, Robin, what have you decided to choose as your masterpiece today?
Well, Melanie, I've gone for Revolver by the Beatles, which came out in the summer of 1966.
Now, you were still a very, very, very young person in the summer of 1966. Do you actually remember it coming out?
Oh, yes, and I suspect you hadn't got anywhere near landing on the planet. There's not many people left alive from 1966. Me, Sir Paul McCartney, a handful of other survivors. I remember it coming out because I was 13, so I was extremely musically aware, and it was a great time to be musically aware, as I am constantly stressing in interviews these days. I mean, you know, you're at your most sensitive to so much, and you know, your adolescence, your antennae are all straining and your pores are all open and you're very poised like a cat watching all the little flickering movements of the adult world. Where am I going to fit in that? You know, who am I? What is it? You're probably at your smartest in a way. By odd coincidence, that was for me between 1965 and 1968, which was when not only music transformed from pop into rock, you know, the effect of Bob Dylan mating with the Beatles, effectively. But also the world going into colour, the whole, what was acceptable in terms of people's sexual lives and the way they looked, all the things that have led to changes in diet and all sorts of things, you know, modern life basically incubated and happened, certainly in Europe then. And a lot of the smart Australians kind of came up to fan the flames of British consciousness. You know, we had Germaine Greer and Martin Sharp and Richard Neville and Barry Humphries, and they spearheaded the British underground. They were all a bit older than me, so I was just this kid with my nose pressed up against the glass, and I'd heard the previous Beatles LPs, and I loved the Beatles, but I just discovered Bob Dylan. It kind of broadened everything. It opened everything up. It made everything smarter and more intense. And pop music wasn't just a kind of entertainment. It wasn't just an attitude anymore. It wasn't just about being sexy. You know, in the past, it had been being sexy like Frank Sinatra, or sexy like Elvis Presley, or sexy like the early Beatles, having a lot of attitude, being mildly threatening to the older generation. But when Dylan came along, it was about consciousness. It was about the way people thought. And then, of course, there were the various drugs that Dylan brought in tow with him. And, you know, he famously introduced the Beatles to marijuana in a hotel in New York in 64. So this is just setting the whole scene. And Dylan had pretty much reached the end of his curve. You know, in 66, he had his motorcycle incident and sort of vanished for a while. But the Beatles had this terrific momentum. They were still touring. They were still officially playing Twist and Shout, but they were getting increasingly sick of it. John Lennon had casually remarked in an interview in January to a journalist in London that the Beatles were more popular than Jesus. He didn't say they were better than Jesus, he said they were more popular. 6 months later, this came back to bite him on the arse. You know, and then Lennon, they said the Beatles rep it, the southern states in America, the Bible Belt, whatever, they started burning Beatles records. And the Beatles unintentionally upset some dictator's wife in the Philippines, and so the police protection was withdrawn from them at the airport, and they nearly got crushed to death. They didn't want to be Beatle maniacs anymore. And, you know, George Harrison had started to become quite serious about Indian religion and Indian music, and I think his fame had made him really just wonder what it was all about. You know, he'd been this electrical apprentice who got lucky at 18, and, you know, by the time he was 21, he was in the biggest band in the universe and stuff. Lennon, too, had sort of taken a lot of knocks, I think, and then become, you know, probably oversensitized by the drugs he was taking. So John and George were getting very serious about what was it for, you know? They were all listening to Dylan, who was... Dylan never said what it was for, but and he would never have claimed to, but Dylan made people wonder what it was for. Why are we doing this? You know, pop music never said that before. And that's how all the intellectuals and kids like me, who would probably have been a poet or a professor or an author or something, was lured into picking up the guitar. Rock and roll was a place to go and think. It had never been that before. But actually, if you were a cutting-edge mind in 1966, you were listening to Blonde on Blonde by Dylan and Revolver by the Beatles, and you were reading Indian philosophy and T.S. Eliot and, beat poets and some stuff which is fashionable and some stuff which is not. But it was where the mind coalesced. The great thing with Revolver, though, was that the Beatles were still officially... a pop group. They were like One Direction. They were the most popular band in the world. There were more teenage girls and teenage boys with posters on their walls than any other group in the world, even in the places that nobody could get to. You know, the tendrils of the West couldn't get into China and Russia, but they were into it there if they could find anything out. It was a sort of unifying global force. And it was pop. They were still making songs. If you look at Revolver, everything on it is under 3 minutes long. Mm-hmm. Their brief is still to produce 2 LPs a year of stuff that you can snap your fingers to and go, yeah, 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 and it's all fun. But meanwhile, two of them have actually become philosopher kings. They've become little Dylans. They're not remotely interested in being mop tops anymore.
What was the difference then between, and you as a 13-year-old boy, you're loving the Beatles, their previous album was Rubber Soul.
Yeah.
What's the big difference that makes Revolver such a special album when it comes straight after Rubber Soul? What are the key differences between them that blew your mind at the time and continue to, obviously?
There were no longer any love songs that were just written for the hell of it. There was nothing like Run For Your Life or Wait or Michelle or Girl or those sorts of things, which are brilliantly written songs, but they kind of fit in with what the Beatles had been about all along, which was basically beautiful love songs with a vocabulary of about 15 words or whatever, you know. Yeah, My Friend, Diamond Ring. Their brand was very simple. There's more George than there ever has been. There's 3 George songs. One of them doesn't have the rest of the band on at all. It's just Indian instruments. But the Indian instrument drone permeates the rest of the record. Taxman, which starts off as a George song, has this brilliant Indian guitar solo. It's actually played by McCartney. And the Paul songs, the songs that are about romance, are not in a style he's written before. He's playing the piano. I don't think there's been Paul at the piano before. For No One is an exquisite song. That's one of his best ever songs, and it's so simple. It's just piano, bit of drums and a horn, you know.
Your day breaks, your mind aches, you find that all her words of kindness linger on when she no longer needs you.
Good Day Sunshine is great. It's terrific fun. I think I saw a video of them wearing straw hats or something for that.
Good Day Sunshine. Good Day Sunshine. Good Day Sunshine.
That began a series of McCartney pastiche songs that then went on to When I'm 64 and Honey Pie and Maxwell's Silverhammer, and the others got more and more fed up with it. But Good Day Sunshine, they're still all happy to sing along, you know, great harmonies. Here, There and Everywhere was one of John's favourite songs. It's quite Lennon-y in a way that goes up and down. And then you've got the great psychedelic tracks, She Said, She Said, at the end of side one, which apparently Paul is not on, but George is playing the bass and it's got some funny time signature complexity. I think it's George harmonizing with John, but I think it's about 3 John songs that stuck together by John and George, but credited to John and Paul because that's the way it worked. But that's one of the best sort of examples of Lennon Harrison.
I know what it's like to be dead.
And And then Tomorrow Never Knows. It's the alpha and omega of psychedelic music. It's the Big Bang. It's from which, in a way, all space rock and prog rock and drone rock and everything kind of comes from that and goes back to that. The cusp of them being about to take themselves very, very seriously, moving from general adulation to critical adulation and having to deal with that, and also becoming increasingly internalized by the drugs they were taking. They were taking things that could have caused clinical insanity in those situations. It's remarkable that they came out of it as relatively level-headed as they did.
Tell me how it influenced you as a musician, and I guess how it continues to influence you as a musician.
Well, it went in quite gently, you know, because it sounded like the Beatles. It was recognisably, you knew all, you know, the harmonies were familiar. Their MO was familiar. They still did a lot of three-part vocals. So it was a development. I was soaking myself in Bob Dylan, as were a lot of us, you know, and then all the other people like the Byrds and were coming up, and Jimi Hendrix appeared not long after. But its influence was quite subtle on me as a musician, because I actually, when I picked up the guitar a few years later, I just got hold of a Bob Dylan songbook, and you can play all those basic Dylan chord songs in three chords, you know, within 10 minutes. You can play Blowing in the Wind and Mr. Tambourine Man, and a simplified version of Like a Rolling Stone. Beatles songs are far more complex, so I became a musician primarily because of the influence of Dylan. Dylan was the thing that got me going, but actually over the last, it's nearly now 50 years, the thing that's influenced me most musically is the Beatles. I'm still listening to the harmonies, I'm still trying to figure things out. You get two or three musicians together and you say, what's the second chord of The Sun King? Well, I think it's E minor. No, it's C major 7. But, you know, and it just goes on. It's kind of subtle and endless. You know, the Beatles, I'll never stop listening to the Beatles, even the stuff I know really well. And Revolver, all of them. But I think it's affected me musically rather than lyrically. If anything, I'm known for being obscure. Oh, right, he's that bloke that somebody likes or whatever, you know. Oh, he's the bloke no one's ever heard of. Oh, I knew him. I'm the reverse of the Beatles, you know. I'm just not drawn to big crowds. And that, I mean, there was nothing else was like the Beatles. I didn't even have a McCartney, let alone a George, you know, or a Ringo. Or if I'm George, then I didn't have a Paul or a John. You know, I'm a little folky kind of module. I go where I go, and I can manage it by being quite self-contained, although I've got lots of friends that I play with and people who are, you know, nice enough to lend me their bands. But they went for something huge, and I went for the reverse. And also what I did with words was different. Having said that, there's points where, I don't know, John Lennon writes, what's the new Mary Jane, or Happiness is a Warm Gun, or I Am the Walrus, or stuff. Mm. And that's sort of in the sphere that my lyrics have been in. But I would never have written a song like Yesterday or Michelle. I don't think I could have written anything as simple as Something. You know, there's very, I don't know, Rocky Raccoon. If I'd come up with something as sassy as that, I'd have been very proud. Oh, God, you know, I mean, it gives you something to aim at and miss.
Robin Hitchcock, thank you so much.
Ah, you're super welcome. In the town where I was born, lived a man who sailed to sea, and he told us of his life in the land of submarines. So we sailed on to the sun till we found the sea of green.
That's musician Robin Hitchcock with his masterpiece, Revolver, by the Beatles, of course. You can see Robin on March 4 at the Yarra Hotel in Melbourne, March 7 and 9 at WOM Adelaide playing with Emma Swift, and March 12 at The Factory in Sydney.